Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Well, in 2007, at the age of 39, Hugh Clark went on a search to find his biological father, and he found him, living just two suburbs away. Hugh has put together a documentary of that reunion, and it is very moving indeed.
Oh, no, I don't think I could give him much advice, you see. I've actually led a rather secluded life because I've been a loner for a long time. I don't eat much, and when you're a gambler and you've got haven't got the money to buy the food, well, you've got to put up with the consequences.
Hugh Clark, welcome to Open House.
Great to be here, Sheridan.
Just in case we've got the tissues, you know, so either of us, you know, need to actually dip into them. I mean, it's quite an emotive story. But what the interesting thing is, actually, you are a documentary maker, and at this stage, you actually turned the cameras around on yourself.
Yes, that was a decision that has been a tense one, because it's your understanding as a documentary maker that you always put a bias, you always have a point of view that you bring, and to want to do something that was honest and authentic, that honoured my story and my father's story, was a bit of tension, but it ended up being incredibly cathartic. So the fact that I missed out on having this image of my father in my life for so long, now I was concentrating on it in the edit suite, you know. I was looking at it over and over again, and that has done something to me.
Well, I'll be interested to explore just to what degree that's actually done something to you. Let me just start at the beginning, though. As a child, you're raised by your grandparents.
That's right.
What did you know then, as a child growing up, what did you know of your origins and your brother's origins? You know, what did you know about your mum? What did you know about your dad?
It was quite confusing and held in confusion because of the sort of cloud of sort of shame that really there was about my brother and I coming into the world. My brother and I are 18 months apart. We have the same mother, and it was her parents, our maternal grandparents, that were forced, really, or they chose to come and rescue us. Well, they needed to rescue us from the squalor and the state that we were living in under the care of our mother, who was mentally ill at this time in Victoria and Melbourne. She had married a third man, and so we were allowed to believe conveniently that he was our father. But I think deep down in our heart, we knew he wasn't. And there was always this cloud of mystery about him and our real fathers. And there was little bits of rumours as our uncles and our grandparents talked about the situation.
So when did you find out that he wasn't your dad?
I think definitively it was in my early 20s.
Is that right?
Yes.
That's very, very late for somebody to find out.
Yes. Again, it was just this sort of cloudy, hazy, not knowing. And I guess when you there was this wonderful, I guess, stopgap of my grandparents that did a most incredible job to bring two young boys up when they should have been retiring. My grandfather, a war veteran, and my grandmother, just a hardworking, good, decent woman. So they gave us that veneer of security in our lives that we needed.
Obviously you needed. Tell me about then the switch to then go and start searching for your biological dad. What was the catalyst for you?
Well, just to clarify, in the early 20s, I spoke to Raymond for the first time. So I rang him, I had the number, and he matter-of-factly affirmed that he believed that he had fathered me. And, you know, it was a very short conversation, and I left it there. I was off overseas, traveling and singing, performing, and it was like I didn't feel the need to have this other father come into my life now. I think then coming back, meeting my wife Heather, having children in my 30s, and then particularly when my two boys came along, really connecting through becoming a father, it gave me this wonderful experience of connecting with my children, and particularly my boys, and then through my own boys, recognizing what I missed out on, recognizing, wow, I didn't have this father in my life. And it helped me to locate the wound, if you like, and to recognize that I needed to seek out this man if he was still alive.
Open House is what you're listening to. Hugh Clark is a documentary maker, one of the few people who would actually become the subject of his own cameras in terms of looking for his dad. The documentary is called My Father's Voice. You can actually find it on our website right now. So you start on this search then at the age of 39 to go and look for Raymond, your biological father. Did you actually have to go through the process of finding the details again? I mean, was the phone number still working? I mean, what was...
No,
how did you start getting your details?
It was funny. When I decided that I wanted to make the journey and reconnect with him, it was very hard. It was very hard to locate even the spelling of his name. It was quite a comedy of errors. Even getting the right spelling from my mother seemed to be hard. It seemed to be just was being thwarted at every turn. And then a period I remember vividly on holidays one day, walking down a beach, crystal clear day, blue skies, except for a wisp of a cloud here and there. And the impression that I felt was the, you know, I guess God's voice in some ways. The impression was that this cloud in the sky was like the cloud of shame, not knowing the truth of my coming into the world, not knowing the truth about my father. And that God was going to, he was going to do it. He was going to take that away and he was going to allow me to receive the fullness of the sunshine, you know. Mm. And it was within 2 weeks of that experience that I'd found the number, I made the call and I had spoken to him.
You make the call, you speak to him, you arrange a time to meet. What was that day like?
You know, I make it sound so easy. I found the number and made the call. Yeah. But I have to say, it was the hardest thing that I've ever done in my entire life. Even making the call was incredibly hard. It was like a watershed moment in my life. You know, I found the spelling of his name. It wasn't the one that I thought, Bortzeli, you know. But I picked one and I thought, if I call this, it doesn't matter who answers the phone. It doesn't even matter if it goes to an answering machine. I have crossed the line. Mm-hmm. At that time in my life was just huge. And it was, I kept it a bit secret even from my wife, because I even didn't want the pressure of accountability. Have you made the call? How are you going?
I just,
it was something I had so secret. And over a course of 2 weeks, I'd called a number of times. And it was like every time I called and it rang out. And then when I got through and spoke to him, it was just incredible that here it was, my first call, it was him. You know, he again confirmed that he thought he was my father and talked about meeting my mother, and we had just this amicable chat like we were old friends for 15 minutes. Consequently, you know, I'd wrote to him, I sent a photo of my family and said that I wanted to meet, to, you know, not ask for anything in return other than a friendship, and other to just clarify a little bit more about my coming into the world. So we arranged to meet in a cafe in Glebe, and that was the next step, I guess.
Okay, so you both arrive at this cafe in Glebe in Sydney. Recognise any features?
Didn't recognise any features at all. It actually looked like, you know, a cross between Gandhi and Mr. Magoo, you know. So not a strapping, you know, big man, but a 79, 80-year-old man. Yeah. And he was chatting to some guy out the front and pulling out these photos of himself. And he looked up and we met eyes and he said, "Hi, son." And
how did you feel about that? First time you've been called son.
Yeah, well, I didn't know whether it was intentional or just off the cuff. But, you know, I've come to know that despite all his faults or all his mistakes, he's a genuine man. And he, you know, has a warmth about him, has a warmth in his eyes, in his heart. And he's a truthful man in that sense. As what comes across in the documentary, you know, he speaks the truth as he knows it. It's very simple. It's very childlike in many ways.
There was one moment, actually, in the documentary which kind of got me a little bit, and I was just wondering how you felt when he actually said this in the documentary. Obviously, somebody else actually asked him the question. But the question was basically, if you could have had more time with Hugh, would you have liked to have had that more time? Would you have liked to have spent more time with him? And this is what he actually said.
No, not really, because his mother could be a rather difficult person at times, I found. Perhaps I didn't want to be entangled by a little baby in interfering with any of my performing.
When that footage was then played to you in the studio, because obviously you went there when you first heard that, I mean, you've actually got your biological father say, no, I probably didn't really want to spend more time with him. I mean, how do you feel about listening to that? I mean, how do you...
Yeah, it's tragic. It is. It's tragic, but it makes perfect sense. And one of the endearing themes, I think, out of this process in this documentary will be the idea that there's a cyclical aspect to parenting and to fathering particularly. One of the great healing aspects of meeting Raymond is understanding a bit about his father and what he got or what he didn't get from his father. Being one of eight new immigrants from Italy, his father worked very hard, and being the youngest, Raymond didn't get a look in. And so you'll hear in the documentary how little he knows about his father.
Well, it's another question that was asked. Mm. Did your father ever come and watch you play sport? Mm. And Raymond, your biological dad, says no. Would you have liked your dad to have come and watched you play sport? And he said, no, I don't think so.
I know, it's strange. It's strange and important for me to understand that, though.
Gives it context as to the responses that he gave to you. I mean, because there were times where he was actually quite blunt about some of his experiences, even after meeting you, which I guess if that's the kind of experience he's had with his own dad, like you said, it's kind of cyclical.
Because I can't conceive how someone could bring life into the world, bring a human being into the world, and not do everything humanly possible to have connection with that person. So to bring life and abandon that life, I just cannot conceive it, and it makes me angry. And part of the anger about that has fueled me making this documentary to try and learn something from it, to try and offer some hope, some benefit, and to help others that might be in a situation where they've got a choice. They've got a choice to reconcile with an estranged son or daughter. Or if, like me, they're a child, they have a chance to try and reach out to an aging parent that they've been estranged from. And, you know, the thing that fuels that, the thing that drives it, is God's grace, because I was so far away from him. Mm. And God reached out to me, you know, and he continues to reach out to us and opens his heart up to rejection, because he knows we're worth it. And so I had to let go of all that bitterness and anger towards Raymond. And I had to ask God to give me the grace to reach out to him, this man. I could have been so justified to keep my anger and bitterness, and not, he doesn't deserve, you know, my affection and my love and my friendship. But I didn't deserve it either. And I've received that grace, and I want to give it to him, not in my own strength, but in God's strength. And that's really been central to this journey for me. So hearing him say things like that, it hurts on one level, but it makes perfect sense. He didn't receive it from his own father. He didn't know how to show it to me. And for me to break that cycle and to turn it around for my own kids, I have to determine in my heart to show him love, so that I won't pass any of that negativity and bitterness and brokenness. I won't pass any of that onto my kids. I'll only pass on blessing and love and goodness, and they'll be able to pass that on for generations to come. It takes only one generation to wreck a whole tradition of goodness and blessing. But it also takes, you know, one generation to fix it. And I want to be a generation that turns it around and sees...
Interrupts evil with good, as I heard one person put it.
Yeah, well put.
Yeah. Isn't that nice? Mm. Open House is what you're listening to. Hugh Clark went on a journey to find his biological dad, found him just a couple of suburbs away, and the result is a documentary called My Father's Voice. You can find it on our website now, openhouseonline.com.au. If you've had a similar experience of finding a biological parent after maybe years in your adult years, I'd like to know how it worked out for you and just what pieces were kind of put together for you about you and about who you are as a result of that. 1-300-40-2020 is my number. What pieces of the puzzle for you, Hugh Clark, Hugh Clark's personality, Hugh Clark the man, fell into place after meeting Raymond?
Oh, yes. There was lots of those moments. You know, I've been an entertainer and a singer and did all that in a previous life. And to see my father and see him, you know, still at 83, thinks he's got a great voice and loves to sing. But it's very natural to him, and it's very much a part of, you know, the Italian background. So it was great to say, oh, that's where I got that from, you know. But there's also a tragic element to that too, because, you know, even now he's just like this little child that dances and sings and is just looking for dad to say, yeah, you're good, son. You're great. I love what you're doing. And I think I had that for a lot. I think not every entertainer or singer or actor would have this, but I think a lot of people that find themselves drawn to that career where they're needing applause are really just wanting the affirmation from their dad or their mum.
Sure.
But that was certainly true for me. But another part of it, I had to say, well, actually, that's still part of me. You know, I'm this passionate, expressive Italian, you know. I never thought I had that before. I was squarely in the Caucasian camp at high school, not in the, we had another derogatory term for it back then, which I won't use. but now I realize, you know, I'm part Italian. I have Italian blood in me, and that's good. And that's been part of the healing, is to be able to say, okay, what's good in Raymond, in the Bortzelli sort of tradition, and actually, you know, appropriate that, if you like, or celebrate that in myself.
To what degree do you feel like you've got a little bit of closure then on all those years where you didn't have your dad around?
Yeah, it's a tough one, because even meeting my father, and I had coffee with him this morning, there's a sense like I've had to grieve through this process. And meeting my father, you know, here's a person, finally a face that I can forgive, that I can feel a sense of loss about. And I've had to grieve not having him in my life. There's that has been part of the process of making the documentary, but I also have to, so I have to grieve what was found as well as what was lost. And what is found is this man that has so little to give, you know. He's like a child himself, and being at the end of his life and not having had a good fathering experience himself.
Talked about some sort of gambling addiction you were talking about in the documentary.
Yeah, that's right. His only excitement is, as I mentioned, music and dancing. He likes doing that. That's free. But his other addiction is gambling on dogs. And
he's living by himself, I think, most of his life.
Living by himself. He never remarried, never had another family. So really an isolated, lonely man. But he probably doesn't know how sad that is. To me, it looks incredibly sad, because I have a very blessed and full life with church, community, family, friends, loving wife and family. And so he's missed out on the fullness that my kids have brought to me. You know, I could have brought him such richness, such blessings, I could have matured him. He hasn't matured because he hasn't had the responsibility of young children. So I've had that, and I see how much that's brought to me, and I meet my father and I feel sad for him, you know. So it's a constant sort of wound there, but it's almost like, will he ever understand what he's missed out on? And I'm not sure he will, because I've been able to experience being a father, and so I've been able to recognize what he's missed out on.
In the documentary, you say, I'm 42 now, and I need my father now more than ever. Are things getting better in any way now? Do you think you are starting to become father and son? How do you feel about that relationship now?
I think looking back, and not having a father in my life, I became very sort of self-confident, and I tried to work it all out and do it all myself. And I didn't have that sort of open acceptance of men's influence in my life, mentors and others feeding into my life. And so when I say that in the documentary that I need a father, I really need fathers. I need older men, I need younger men, you know, people that have wisdom, and I need to be open and vulnerable and accepting of what others can bring into my life, because so long in my life, I didn't have the openness to that. I didn't know how to receive from a father, you know. I didn't have that state of openness and receptivity in my personality and who I was, because I was so driven to try and work it all out myself.
That's interesting, because, I mean, you and I have known each other for not a long time, but a little while now, and I don't see that in you so much. You know, it seems to me like you're actually quite an open guy. You've suddenly been able to find all of these qualities that actually makes a guy who's able to be vulnerable with other people, learn from other people. Is that the whole Father God thing that's come in for your life? I mean, has that been the church family that you had that mentoring? I mean, where does that come from?
I think that's part of it, you know, but I think there's some part of it is really discovering that inside all of us and inside me now is an 8-year-old little boy, you know, is a 6-year-old little boy like my youngest Oliver. And I still have a need. I'm a father and I've got responsibility and I hold down a job and I'm a husband and I'm mature, but I'm also a little child. Mm. You know, I also have great needs of input in my life, and I have needs of brothers and mentors and father figures. And I think it's been through this journey, through the journey of becoming a father and through the journey of understanding the Father's love and his heart for me, my Heavenly Father, that has caused me to trust more and to open up more. Hmm. And I think that's going to be a constant journey for the rest of my life.
Hmm. What can you leave with people who are about to maybe even think about embarking on the journey that you've just done, which is an incredibly vulnerable journey? I mean, even now, obviously, this is, like you said, this is still a wound that's still in the process of being healed. I mean, what should people prepare for if they are to go down the path that you've gone down?
Well, I would be irresponsible if I said it was easy, and I would be irresponsible if I let people go off without really good support. Really good support, friends, family, if you're a believer, a church community that can support you in that, pray for you and help you through the process, because it is really an emotional roller coaster. Mm-hmm. And you cannot be sure of how long it will take and what your reaction will be. Like grief itself, when you're locating wounds that are deep, wounds that have been buried and pushed down, you don't know what will happen when you expose them. You don't know what will happen if you contact someone you haven't seen for a long, long time. What your reaction will be, what their reaction will be, is completely vulnerable and open to all sorts of treacherous traps in that. But God is there, and God is in the business of reconciling people to each other. And I think his heart will bless a journey that seeks to be about what he's into, you know, reaching out, showing grace, and using every resource that he has available. His strength and his grace will guide you and will be with you if you are open to taking that journey on for the benefit of others, for the benefit of yourself and your own family, and ultimately to his glory.
Mm. Well, thank you for your vulnerability tonight, Hugh. Thanks for joining us. I mean, the documentary is up online if you haven't seen it. It's called My Father's Voice. Openhouseonline.com.au is where you'll find it, just on the front page there. Keep the tissues handy, though.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.